Well, good afternoon. It's Wednesday, October the 14th. We're doing the long-term care provider call. I want to remind you that all our calls are muted and the session is being recorded. We're going to hold for questions at the end of the webinar, and we'll have a Q&A session. As always, if you want to reach long-term care, you can phone us at 405-271-6868, or you can send it through email to ltc@health.ok.gov. And you can also access our long-term care COVID-19 resources on the web at ltc.health.ok.gov. So in our policies and guidance, Dr. Frazier's out today, so give a quick general update. I know that one of the things that they have been doing this week is demobilizing the incident command structure, which was the PPE and a number of other tasks. So my understanding is that Big Commerce is up and running. It's not your primary source for PPE. You should be able to contact your own vendors, but in an emergency, my understanding is you can use Big Commerce to see if you have an emergency and need some PPE. Next up on our Civil Monetary Penalty Reinvestment Fund update from Diane Henry.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being on the call today. Lavetta is out, and so she asked me to give this update for her. So we wanted to let you know that we are now accepting the applications to aid with the purchase of $1,500 of in-person visitation supplies, and that might include things like tents or the plexiglass that you might want to purchase for barriers inside your facility. If you're interested in applying for that particular application, you can go to our website at cmp.health.ok.gov, and the application and the guidelines will be listed there. You can also email us at cmp@health.ok.gov. Some of you may be wondering about the payments that regarding the technology communication devices that you submitted for. Emails have been sent out to every facility regarding the status of your payment, and the emails will provide the date that the claims were sent to our accounts payable department. And if you have not received an email by the end of the day tomorrow, please, again, feel free to contact us at cmp@health.ok.gov. We just wanted to let you know that if you try to reach Lavetta, she's going to be on vacation through next Wednesday, October the 21st. But you can go ahead and email, and she will respond when she comes back. You can also email that CMP email address, and we can each respond to that. Unfortunately, we also want to report and let you know that Lisa Connor has submitted her resignation for the CMP department, and that will be effective as of October 26th. And she's going to move over to becoming an occupational nurse for the health department. Lisa's done a great job, and she's been a great member of the team, and we're really going to miss her, and we wish her all the best. And, Mike, that's all I have on CMP funds.
Thanks, Diane. Let's get Sherry on the phone here. Hey, Sherry, it's Mike. I'm good. So next up, we have our QIN, QIO update from Telegen, and we have Sherry Longacre.
Hi, Hi. Thank you, Mike, for having me on the call today. My name is Sherry Longacre, and I'm a Senior Quality Improvement Facilitator at Telegen. And Telegen is the Quality Innovation Network, Quality Improvement Organization, or the QIN-QIO, for the state of Oklahoma. And today I want to share that the end date for partnering with Telegen is drawing near, and after November 6th, registration will be officially closed. So unless CMS does extend that deadline, that's the official deadline to partner with Telegen at this moment. And as I've kind of talked about in the past, CMS added a caveat with the new QIN-QIO contract, and that is that we can only give additional support and resources to those nursing homes that partner with us. So we need all of our nursing homes in Oklahoma to register for Telegen QI Connect, and this ensures that if you need technical assistance, then we can provide that assistance. And if your nursing home is not registered, then you will have access to tools and resources on the website, but just not the exclusive events, tools, and resources that will be available to the nursing homes that have partnered with Telegen. So there is absolutely no cost to participate with Telegen and no specific requirements. Yes, we will be having learning collaboratives, but it is optional to join in and to pick and choose those events that interest you. So we have lots of tools and resources, and we just posted a compendium of the testing and reporting requirements for nursing homes and a flu resource guide for patients and providers. So you might want to check that out. Telegen continues to provide assistance with NHSN and troubleshooting, and new guidance was released, and NHSN will be sending out invites to upgrade your NHSN access from level 1 to level 3 access. So just kind of keep an eye out for that, because they do send those invites out via email. So just kind of look out for that. We do have a few upcoming learning opportunities that I'd like to share. And tomorrow on our long-term care office hours call, we will be having Dr. Namali Stone from the CDC, and she'll be reviewing the current CMS guidelines related to testing requirements and reporting processes for nursing homes and clinical laboratories. We also have weekly root cause analysis classes that you can pop in at your convenience. We have them every Tuesday at 10:30 Central Time. And then we're also adding a Plan, Do, Study, Act PDSA training course that we will be held every other Wednesday. So just to kind of like to share that with you. I also just invite you to access the Telegen website at telegenqinqio.com to register with Telegen QI Connect and just check out our upcoming events. And if I know you're super busy, and if you just shoot me an email, I can register you as well. So that works for me too. And you can reach me at slongacre@telegen.com, or my office number is 405-810-3224. I'd love to hear from you, and I love helping my nursing home. If there's anything I can do, please let me know. With that, I'll turn it back over to you, Mike. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thanks, Sherry. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to say, if you haven't reached out to Telegen, they're an excellent source for you to pick up the phone. I know a lot of the times you call us and ask us questions, but you can also pick up the phone and call Telegen. They're happy to help with just about anything, so give them a call. We're going to move over into operations, and we're going to go through some licensing updates, and that's going to be Espa Bowen.
Good afternoon, everyone. I don't have much to talk about this afternoon. The licensure program, we still continue to renew licenses as they come in. We're still doing some of the stragglers that have not processed their license in a timely manner, so we still reach out to them for those options. The other thing I wanted to reiterate again this week is the notice of change forms. If you have a new administrator in your facility, or DON, please make sure you're doing that notice of change form and sending it in a timely manner. Because we have the surveyors that are going back out now, and I'm receiving calls that the new administrator has not been added to the facility. And as you know, if this hasn't been done, the old administrator is still responsible for what goes on in that facility until we have done the changes on those. So please get your notice of change forms into us as quick as possible. We need those so that we can have the correct information in the system when they go out. Thank you.
Yeah, it's also important for that to be in because a lot of the communications, enforcement actions, your statement of deficiencies all go to the administrator. So if you haven't updated that recently, let's get it in. On to notification and resources. We release a lot of information through Gov Delivery, and up next is Diane Henry to discuss all of that.
Thank you, Mike. I'm going to go through some of the information that we sent out yesterday in the Gov Delivery notification. The first information is the MDS-related news. CMS provided the option for states to collect the PDPM data item sets on the standalone comprehensive OBRA assessments and also the quarterly item sets. This allows states to be able to compare the PDPM classifications to the RUG groups for an analysis of the reimbursement system so that they can determine future payment models. Oklahoma is required to go through a rulemaking process if we want to change the MDS and require specific items to be collected by the nursing homes that are not required by CMS. So therefore, Oklahoma is not participating this year in the collection of the PDPM items on the standalone OBRA assessments. We may be looking at doing something like that in the future once we go through the rulemaking process. CMS also postponed the other MDS changes that were previously discussed, such as the removal of Section G. So because of all those postponements related to COVID, Oklahoma nursing homes will not experience any kind of MDS changes this year. The other next item is the CLIA, Frequently Asked Questions. Our CLIA department compiled a list of some of the questions that have come in, and I've picked out just a few to cover with you. And I discussed this with Elizabeth Waltman, who is the director of the CLIA department, prior to this call. So the first one that we want to look at, and again, this link and this attachment was provided in your Gov Delivery if you want to pull that up. So the first question is, which rapid point-of-care antigen tests have been sent to the long-term care facilities? So the first distribution of these point-of-care tests was either the BD Viridor system or the Quidel Sophia test system. Some of the nursing homes are now starting to receive a second antigen test, and that's called the Abbott Binex Now test. We sent out a survey trying to collect, you know, information on whether you have received these tests or not, or these machines. And so if you're still not receiving them, you can give me a call or an email. My number is 405-271-5278. My email address is Diane, D-I-A-N-E-H, at health.ok.gov. And you can let me know if you're still having any kind of problems, and I will get that information over to the appropriate department. The next question is, how will facilities be trained to use some of this equipment? Some of the responses we received on the survey related to that, they said that you were not using the testing equipment because you had not been trained on it. When you get these devices, be sure and look at your manufacturer's instructions and also the training material that's included. They've also provided online training that you can access. And just remember that all staff that's going to be performing these tests have to participate in this training. And you also need to document that training in the personnel files prior to them performing any of these tests. There's other information that you need to be aware of that you have to keep it, these devices and test supplies at the manufacturer's temperature range. document on a daily temperature log what the temperature range is and that you're assessing this every day. If you don't follow these guidelines of not training properly or not following the temperature ranges, it could result in, you know, like a false positive or even a false negative. So be sure that you're following those guidelines. The next question, can facilities share their testing system with other facilities, including their sister facilities? And the answer to that is no. They're not able to do that. These were distributed, and the analyzer materials are for intended use of the residents and staff under that nursing home's CLIA number only. So it goes back to the federal CLIA regulations that you have to follow on that. Once you collect the information and the testing, then how are you supposed to report it? There's been quite a bit of confusion on the reporting requirements. Some of the requirements include long-term care reporting, CMS and CDC requirements, and then additionally, there's specific laboratory requirement reporting. Once the CLIA department approves your application to add the COVID-19 testing, then they're sending you an email, so refer back to that email that you got, because this includes all the reporting information for the laboratory requirements. And that consists of the Qualtrics report as well as the acute disease reporting system using the FIDO system. Elizabeth shared with me that the FIDO system is expected to be changing approximately the end of this month. So be looking for that. And you might want to contact the acute disease department to see what type of changes that you need to be prepared for. And the last one, what if a long-term care facility cannot perform their in-house training? Well, you are required to meet all of the testing requirements. And in order to try to help with that, the CLIA department compiled a list of reference labs. You can collect your samples if you're not able to perform the test yourself or if you don't have the supplies to perform the test. You can send that sample to one of these reference labs. But before you do, be sure you contact them and work with them. Make sure that they can provide that 48-hour turnaround time before you send that to them. There's 15 labs that are listed on that particular reference lab list, and that, again, was included in your notification that you received yesterday. As a reminder, the CLIA department need you to, and it's also a federal requirement, that you notify the CLIA department within 30 days of any facility changes. That includes any kind of demographic information that's changed, any ownership changes. And then if you have an administrator that's listed as your CLIA director, if you have an administrator change, you also need to notify the CLIA department. This is in addition to the change or the notice of change form that ESPA just spoke of earlier. We cannot use that same form for the CLIA department because of the federal requirements. So therefore, you need to notify the CLIA department separately. The next item in your notification was the OKHON, and it was the updated hospital discharge to long-term care facility guidance. We spoke about that last week, so just wanted you to be aware that that was sent out to you in this notification. If you've got any questions on that, be sure and contact either Latrina or Janine or one of the long-term care departments. CMS recently sent out a QSO memo, and it's QSO 21-02-NH. And this memo is related to making sure that the residents' right to vote is followed. This particular memo was specified for nursing homes, but just remember that any citizen, no matter what setting they're in, no matter what long-term care facility they're in, every citizen has the right to exercise their right to vote, so every facility type should be following these guidelines. You have to have some type of plan in place to assist residents in their voting. And this includes registering to vote. And just remember, the registration deadline is November the 3rd, so you want to help them with that prior to then. You also want to have a plan to help them complete the ballot if needed. That might include getting the ombudsman in to help with that. If you have any questions about voting, contact the Oklahoma State Election Board. You can just Google that, and that will come up for you in your search. Okay. I also included an article that was a great resource for you in your notification, and it came from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services as well as Homeland Security. And they put together some strategies and resources that they included in this document. And it also applies to all long-term care facility types. And it included potential strategies to consider for facility operations and delivery of care whenever there's different levels of care that has to be implemented, such as the conventional level, contingency, or crisis level. There's a really good chart that they've included that helps break all of these different levels down and what facility information that you need to look at and consider on that. They did want to emphasize that this is intended to complement and not replace existing or state local guidance and plans for implementing this information. Okay, Mike, that is all I have. I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Dan. Question. So we send out tons of memos and things that we talk about so that, you know, we don't go into extremely detail on conversations but allow you to get that. How do you sign up for these, to get these emails, notifications?
They can email me at Diane, D-I-A-N-E-H, at health.ok.gov, or you can also go to our website, which is mds.health.ok.gov, and at the top you will see a link that says Get Updates. Just click on that and fill out the information on what you want to sign up for and receive notifications on.
Thank you. Our next discussion will be on survey deficiency concerns. This has to do with what we've seen in the last 2 weeks, what's rising to the top, and possible help. And for that, we'll have Pam Anderson.
Good afternoon. Most of the deficiencies that we're writing right now are related to PPE, not wearing it properly, or not wearing the exact things that you need to be wearing in different circumstances, and with using the supplies that are not appropriate for COVID-19. And that's pretty much what we're citing right now that we're finding.
Thanks, Pam. Janine, do you have an update for us today?
Not really.
No? What are you seeing out there?
Well, we actually just were out this morning. Pretty much, I think now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. Everybody has the information with the things that they should be doing, but the gaps that I have noted and Rhonda have noted are some of the simple practices of just being self-aware. Hand hygiene. When you take gloves off, sanitize or wash your hands. Making sure that you're not moving multiple places without performing hand hygiene. If you're supposed to have PPE on for an activity that you go into the room for, make sure that you put it on. It's important to protect yourself when you're working in a positive environment, especially. So the habits of people touching the N95, grabbing a hold of them, pulling them away from your face, those are the sorts of things that can lead to self-contamination and possible illness. And, you know, nobody wants to see that happen. Don't put your folks in that position. If you see it, address it. It's very important. Some of the other things, your items in your environment that can contribute to illness. Hand contamination occurs from environmental surfaces that aren't properly cleaned. Making sure that when PPE is doffed or removed, make sure that process is happening appropriately. Still seeing quite a few places where it's hanging over the side of the trash can. It's not contained in a nice, neat little ball like it should be. It's number one, it contributes to environmental contamination. Number two, you got hazards when things are hanging out of trash cans. So, you know, some of the back to the basic sort of things, whether people are getting lax or the monitoring isn't occurring and being addressed either in real time or globally, it's really important. Acknowledge the wonderful things your staff are doing, because there are some of them out there that are pretty incredible. In 16 years of doing infection prevention specifically, you've got some really good folks with innovative ideas that are working well. Everybody has a need to address gaps. No one is perfect, and especially in an ever-changing situation that COVID has been, everything is fluid. Kind of rolling with some of the punches, clarifying if something doesn't make sense, by all means, reach out to me, reach out to the EPIs and acute disease, reach out to long-term care, especially for those regulatory-specific things. Those are going to be key components for you to be successful. And really, be transparent with your staff. Let them know, hey, you know, we've been monitoring hand hygiene and we're at 60%. We need to bump that up. Put things into place to engage folks that isn't a threatening sort of thing, or, you know, felt to be singling anyone out. There are plenty of fun things that you can do to encourage hand hygiene that aren't just hollering across the room at somebody you didn't wash your hands. You know, if you need some fun little ideas to engage staff, holler at me. I've got several that I can offer to you. But I think really you all just need to make sure that you're focusing on the basics, because right now that's where a lot of the failures with good, complete good practices are. You know, just be mindful of that and remind staff, because I think what it all boils down to is everybody should have basic infection prevention under their belt at this point. You can better address the things that are COVID-specific if you've got the other pieces in place. So thank you for those of you who called and asked some really good questions. Enabled me to provide you with the CDC guidelines and such. You are not bothering me, so please quit apologizing when you call me. It's what I'm here for. In case you don't have it, the phone number for acute disease to reach me is 405-271-4060. My email is jenenek@health.ok.gov. That's all I know about that.
Thanks, Janine. Appreciate it. And I want to emphasize what Janine said. If you have a question, call and get information on that before we come out and do a survey. We're glad to help educate, give you ideas all day long up until we come out to do a COVID-focused survey or a complaint investigation. At that time, we're not really in an educational mode. We have the regulator hat back on. So if you're concerned about some practice that you're doing, reach out to us, and we're more than happy to provide an opinion on how we think it could be done. So that leads me to talk about some of the survey and certification updates. Two of the things that are constantly see an email on are testing and visitation. So on the testing, what I will tell you is long-term care continues to do outbreak testing for facilities that have reported one or more new positives, which could be staff, which could be resident, either way. So if your facility has a new positive, be sure to do it on your facility reported incidents, your 283, which you report to long-term care and to acute disease, and we'll give you a call and get outbreak testing scheduled. In September, we did 16,900 samples, and since October 1st through October 9th, we've done 8,700 samples. So the outbreak testing, we can get it done relatively quickly and get those results turned in and back to us in less than 48 hours and be set up to help you get your second and your third testing, and hopefully that would be it, and you'd have two negatives and you would be cleared. If you have any questions about that, reach out to us and call us. The other two testing types, symptomatic and routine, should be covered by your facility. So if you're a nursing home, you are either using the antigen machines that have been provided or you have some arrangement with a private lab to conduct symptomatic and routine testing. So be able to do that. What does that say for assisted living, res care, adult daycare? I get that question. It's like, so this doesn't apply to us. You're right. Specifically, there has not been a memo that says you must do XYZ testing. However, you are required to have an infection prevention plan and policy in place. So doing nothing will not suffice either. We recommend the nursing home guidelines. They have done a lot of research and had a lot of success. That'd be a good plan to adopt if you are one of those types of facilities. Visitation, kind of the same thing. Family members are getting very active about not seeing their loved ones. And I'll use this as an analogy. When you don't tell somebody something, they make things up in their mind. And they try and come up with something to fill it. So if you can communicate with them and let them know what's going on, regardless of whether or not you are greater than 10%, whether you're 0%, the key to it is communication and letting them know what is going on with the facility. You know, yeah, you've got some positives. It's out on the web, and the news reports it all the time. Let them know how many you've got, and you know that you have a plan and you're quarantining. But if you'll give them some information, it will definitely help ease the pressure of them, you know, reporting to their congressman or reporting to CMS, reporting to us that the facility is doing nothing. So regardless of your status, whether you're red, green, yellow, you need to have some type of visitation. Obviously, if you're red, then virtual. We can still do some outdoor. That's the most recommended, is the outdoor. But try to do something. Otherwise, you'll be in a position where when we do come out to do an investigation, there will be a citation for that. One of the other things is you may have heard the Department of Health is moving. We're moving different service departments. Over the next 3 months, we're supposed to be moved by the end of December. Having said that, I kind of wanted to give you a time frame. They're looking at long-term care moving around the end of this month, around the end of October. So what does that mean? Well, we're going to have a lot of people teleworking. Hopefully, you know, we can get moved very quickly. I'm hoping in less than 2 weeks. So there may be some, the phone number may end up changing. We're working on that right now. So long-term care may have a new phone number. If we do, we will definitely send it to go government delivery and send that out and get everybody notified. We'll let you know on these calls. We're working on that right now. There may be a little disruption in our telephone service. So if you call and you can't get us, you can email us always, ltc@health.ok.gov. That is constantly monitored. Any question at all, and we will route it to where it's the most appropriate. The last two things that I want to talk about are revisits. We've been getting a number of questions. When will revisits start again? I understand your concern. You know, if you're a nursing home and you have received FTAG for 880 on infection control issues, you possibly have a DPNA in effect. And I understand, you know, getting out there, getting a revisit gets that cleared. And also possible CMPs. So we're working on that. One of the things that I can tell you we are doing, we are primarily conducting desk audits. So when you get your 2567 and you're doing your plan of correction, more than likely you're going to get notification if we're doing a revisit to provide your information to us electronically, because we will review that, call you with questions, and try and conduct that as a desk audit. That's also true for complaints. Right now, we are in the facilities fairly frequently, so if we can get this information and you can start preparing that as soon as you get your 2567, it's quite possible that we may move into a phase where when you get your 2567, come up to your plan of correction, you just automatically go ahead and start getting the material for your desk audit ready, and we'll have to figure out some place for you to send that to. We're not there yet. We are doing a few revisits, but we haven't gotten back to do all of them just yet. One other note is that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services is starting to discuss getting back to doing recertifications, so I expect that to start up in the near future, and we'll give you more information on that as we get closer to the requirements and specifically what we're going to be doing. I'm going to look around the room and see if we have any other update. You got something, Janine?
So I noticed last night there were some changes when I set some references. If you all haven't had the opportunity to look at the strategies for optimizing gowns in particular, there have been some updates recently placed in them. Basically, they kind of bumped a few of the things around using like when you can bump back to conventional capacity practices, the use of reusable or cloth isolation gowns actually got moved to a conventional capacity, which is kind of your normal practice versus your contingency or crisis strategy management. They did add some additional language to the prioritizing of gowns, and they basically, as we've educated multiple times, moved the crisis capacity strategy of reusing isolation gowns that are disposable down way, way down to the bottom of the list, and citing the statements about the risk to patients and staff safety. So please, if you get a chance, take the time to go and look at those. If I've already sent them to you within the last couple of days by your request, you've already received the newest information. But go and check that out in case you haven't had the opportunity.
And Janine, that's on the CDC website.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's in the optimization strategies under the PPE section.
Anyone else? Okay, we're going to move into our question and answer session. Give us a minute to get this figured out, and we will start with our questions.
This conference is now in question and answer mode. To alert the speaker that you have a question, press 1, then 0.
So I had a question that I got sent to me today, and I'm not exactly sure in reference, so I'm going to read it exactly like I got it. In regards to antigen testing, why do we have to quarantine residents 14 days with no sign or symptoms? So I immediately had a question mark. Are we talking about returning from hospitals? Are we talking about an antigen test was positive? So I guess a couple of scenarios. I know. I wasn't really sure how.
I don't know where the question came from.
I'm not sure. So if you are on the call and you want to add that, then we can get some more specific information and answer that. So we'll move to our call. Hey, caller. Go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. So I just wanted to clarify, this is a question about the testing frequency based on the county positivity rate. So I know in the QSO memo it talks about the numbers, but I think on one of these calls we were talking about colors, because the colors don't always match with the numbers. So
So are you using the Oklahoma map or are you using the CMS map?
The CMS map.
Okay, so here is the basics. You're red if it's greater than 10%. If it's 5 to 10%, you are yellow. And I'm sorry, 0.5 to 10%. If you're 0.5 or less, you're green. In addition to that, CMS has gone in and looked at counties where they didn't necessarily conduct a lot of testing. And based on that, they have gone in and changed that color. So it's quite possible that you would see something that was red. It would be yellow. And I'm looking. Yeah, I was right. So greater than 10% is red, 5 to 10% is their medium or yellow, and less than 5% is green. There's no map, but if you pull up the data file and you look in there, they will mark that facility by color.
Okay, that, yes, I pulled that up, and I just wanted to clarify, because I think there was one where it was like 11, but the color was yellow. I've seen that numerous times, and so I wanted to just make sure we're doing numbers or colors.
Colors.
color.
If you're using the CMS data, you're using the colors. And like I said, the reason they did that was because typically those counties have very limited testing based on the population.
Okay, and I have one more quick question.
Go ahead.
How often should we be doing a COVID-focused survey? The one that came out with the QSO memo, it was at the end, was updated, I think, at the end of August. How often should we be doing that in our facility?
Are you talking about the attachment on the QSO memo that showed the tool?
Yes.
That was to give you information on what surveyors would be looking at when we go out. You're not required to go through and do your own survey, but it is there so that you will be so that we're transparent and you can see exactly what we're going to be looking at when we come to do a COVID-focused survey.
Okay, that's all I needed. Thank you.
You bet. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, my question relates to if you have a positive employee or a positive resident, now we're notified. We have all this reporting we have to do to FIDO, NHS, all the ones we have to do, plus the 283 to the Department of Health, and now we have to contact the surveyor lead. Would the health department not do that off of the 283, or we have to do that in addition to that?
So the requirement is that if you have a positive, you are required to report it on the 283. There's not a requirement for you to report it to the surveyor or coordinator.
Okay, we've been getting calls that from surveyors telling us, why didn't you report that? And we didn't know we were supposed to be doing it. So, I mean, we'll be happy to do what we're supposed to do, but we are inundated with all this different reporting, and I just wanted to make sure it wasn't any kind of regulation somewhere.
Yeah.
What they're trying to tell you is if you're having an outbreak in your facility and you're doing self-testing, to notify us weekly of your results so we can monitor that you are not in outbreak testing again, that you're out of outbreak testing when you go the 214 days without any new positives.
Are you self-testing?
Well, we're following what the guidance is that CMS put out for us to do facility testing. But if we get one positive, whether it's a part-time employee from somewhere else or that works for us part-time, then we go into what's automatically known as outbreak testing, where we test every resident and every staff till we get two negative cycles a week apart. And then when we would report that on the 283 and all of the other places we're supposed to report, and then we'd be getting calls from surveyors saying, you need to notify your team leader of these reports too. So is that just so they can give us tests if we need them, or is that, what is the intent of that if we're reporting it to on the 283? I thought they would be notifying, so it's confusing, and I just want to know exactly what you guys want so we can do it correctly.
If you're doing outbreak testing, we need to know the results if you're self-testing.
Okay, so if we're sending it off to a lab, you don't need to know?
We still need you to inform us.
Okay, so self-testing meaning that the State Department of Health is not doing the testing.
Let me make sure. There's three types of testing. It's symptomatic, outbreak testing, and routine. Those are the three categories.
Right.
If you are doing outbreak testing and you are doing it yourself, whether it's through your antigen machine or your private lab, you need to report to us and let us know what you're doing every week, because we monitor you while you're in outbreak status.
Okay. All right. So, all right. That makes a little more sense. But, yeah, that we had never received that guidance before. So, thank you for clarifying.
You bet. Sure. Any other question?
No, not related to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, my question was just very similar to the one previous. We had a COVID-focused survey, and we were asked to report every time we do testing and email it directly to our survey coordinator. And, you know, that is testing the results, how many were positive, how many were negative. And we do, and also to tell if it was outbreak or surveillance testing. And if we're doing outbreak testing, we're updating all that on our Form 283. So basically the surveyor that told the administrator that was probably, there was a little bit of a miscommunication. Is that what you're saying?
If you are in outbreak status, not you report it to the team supervisor and you report it on the 283. Because that team supervisor is going to be monitoring your current situation. We will monitor it until you have two cycles of negatives.
Okay, so we only report all of our testing during outbreak testing to our surveyor.
To the team supervisor, yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Hold on, caller.
Is there email?
So our facility is currently in outbreak testing. My question is, are we required to continue our routine testing while we're in outbreak testing?
You are not. You can only be in one or the other.
Okay.
So while you're in outbreak testing, that's the whole point is we're testing every single person that's negative at least every 7 days to see if you have any spread at all.
Right. And our community right now has been required to test twice a week, so we will stop that while we're in outbreak testing.
Yes.
Okay,
you do not do routine and outbreak simultaneously.
And okay, sorry, we have one more question. Go ahead.
That's okay. Go ahead.
My question was, earlier you said if you're above 10, you're going to be red on the map, but you said go by the color. So technically Washington County is yellow, so that would mean we would only test once a week. I just want to make sure we're clear on that. Our number is actually 10.8, I think. But
are you a nursing home or assisted living, res care, adult daycare?
Nursing home.
Okay, so since you're a nursing home, you do not use the Oklahoma map. You are required to use the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services information that you download. And when you download that and you go to your county, it's going to tell you two things. It's either going to give you a red, yellow, or green, and it's also going to give you a number between zero and whatever for your positivity rate.
Right.
If you are green, you have less than 5%.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow, you're 5 to 10%, and red, you're greater than 10%, except for some instances where you should be red and CMS has gone in and manually decided you're yellow because of your population.
Okay, so we go by color.
Yep,
color.
You do go by color, yes.
Thank you, that's it.
I know Janine had a...
So with that information being emailed to the chief supervisor, what sort of information is being emailed? Because that's not the first time I've heard it. Because if we're sending PHI, if we're sending more than numbers, that can be an issue via email without it being a an encrypted piece of information. At least the faxes we know come in. So if more than just numbers to the survey team leads.
Are they calling or emailing?
They're emailing.
It's not going to the team leads. It's going to the coordinators.
Either way, whether it's a team, supervisor, but it's just negative and positives.
So no PHI?
No.
Okay. So that was that was information that was relayed to me as well. That's why I just wanted to ask what that looks like.
No, they should know better than that. They're nurses.
Well, knowing better and what is happening.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi, I would I don't know if this is a comment or I'm just begging for a suggestion. Our problem is, can you hear me?
You can. Go ahead.
Okay. We're a very small facility. We're a 55-room home. The problem is with our staff. So if they have signs and symptoms from COVID, we do what we're supposed to do. We quarantine them home. We do their test, on and on. Well, then they come back to work after their 14 days, and then the next week, they're sick again. And I can sit here and tell you it's the same four employees over and over and over. And I don't know what to do with them, about them.
I'm going to let Janine address this, but I'm going to say, and we are not approving COVID-positive staff to work with COVID-positive residents. That has been put on hold.
Okay.
Well, and this is the first time we've had staff test positive, but it seems like every other week the same staff are complaining of being ill, vague symptoms, just random stuff. And it's almost like they're doing it just to get out of work because they think they're going to get paid.
Well,
and we're just kind of curious if everyone else is dealing with the same thing.
So there's a couple of things going on with the question that you asked. 10 to 20 days is your isolation time frame after someone tests positive, depending on immunocompromised state or not. Symptoms need to be resolving if there were symptoms to start with. They need to be improving. If they're not improving, they should not be coming back to work just because they've met the time frame. Don't forget, we have moved into flu season now. There are other illnesses that can cause symptoms. If these folks are persistently complaining of the illness, they tested positive. We do not they don't recommend testing within 90 days because you will probably get a positive. And, you know, ruling something else out, if they go to their PCP, you know, test for flu, test for strep, whatever that looks like.
And all of the our employees that have been ill, or they say they've all tested negative. They've all, you know, it's where I don't know what's real, what's not. I don't know if they're lying, if they're just wanting to be off work, but thinking they're going to get paid. And it's just very frustrating because it's the very same employees over and over and over.
And that's going to be an internal discussion that you have to have. There's nothing that we can do.
Right.
If it's your policy that someone's ill. If you're paying them because of it being COVID-related and positive, that's what you stand on. You're not paying them for other illnesses or, you know, they're not feeling well, they're not coming to work, they're following policy. But those are internal conversations that you're going to have. If you're following the CDC guidelines for general illness and return to work, nothing is going to change there. If it's COVID, then you're going to follow whatever policies you have in place. You know, ask for transparency. That's the best you can do from your staff. I mean, you know, I wish I could wave a magic wand and have people not be in a panic or not want to not come to work, because the reality is there are others that have faced this as well. So I would just recommend having those conversations.
Okay. All right, well, I just wanted to vent a minute. Thank you for listening.
Sure.
You bet. Thank you. So I did have an update while we were sitting here, and the PPE is now being handled by OEM. And it's through the Big Commerce website, as previously said. But I also have an email to request access to BigCommerce. That email is orders, O-R-D-E-R-S, at oem.ok.gov. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. I had a question kind of about the if you guys have any guidance on visitation and group activities. If our county is in red with COVID positive in the building, and it's in regard to residents that were previously positive but are recovered, do you have any guidance for that?
No symptoms?
No symptoms.
Are you cohorting your positives?
Yes, sir. We have an isolation hall.
So you're asking essentially for your recovered folks if you can have any activities for them, even though you're county positivity rate is red,
and
you actually have an active in your building.
Yeah.
Right, but also with any kind of, like, outdoor visitation or anything of that nature as well.
Are you a nursing home?
Yes, sir. We're a CCRC.
So if you look at the CMS PSO memo that came out, it does tell you that you do not have to necessarily restrict those outdoor visits if your county positivity rate is high. What you need to focus on, in my understanding, even with visiting the CMS and CDC on that particular piece, is that outdoor visitation on individuals that are negative or recovered could still occur. If you are in active outbreak testing mode, you may consider postponing some of those visits because you have ongoing spread. That would be the only significant limitation that you would have to look at. But the county positivity rate is not really supposed to impact your visitation to your residents, but you really need to modify the actual methods that you're using for that visitation to occur, making appointments, limiting the time frame, but still providing them access to their loved ones.
Okay, yeah, we do have window visits in the virtual as far as FaceTime and Zoom, those things. But we are also in outbreak testing right now.
So 2039.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. You will need to be creative. I mean, eventually, it's just like Janine said, outdoor, it doesn't really matter what you're in. You can do outdoor.
Okay.
Indoor, when you're red, I don't know that I would recommend that.
What's that?
Face-to-face, you know, where the people are coming inside.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, the CMS memo still kind of pushes the outdoor when even when you're in that testing. I think when you look at your being actively in outbreak testing, what have your positives been? Have it been high numbers? Has it been low numbers? Has it been individuals that were exposed on the last go-round, or are they now on the other side of the building where there were no positives? So kind of looking at that outbreak testing and where it is in your building, because you would hope that once you remove the source of an active infection away from those and you have it, folks that haven't had continual exposure, they shouldn't develop, hopefully, a positive test result, whether they're symptomatic or asymptomatic. But if you've had known exposure and those folks are coming up positive, you kind of have to think that that's going to happen because there's actually been direct exposure. So, you know, looking at the outbreak testing, you know, the facility-wide, that makes a difference as well.
I think there's two key points that I want to point out for indoor visitation. You're not in outbreak testing. and there's no new onset in the last 14 days. So if you want people to come into your facility, you don't want to be with either one of those. End of life is a different thing. Compassionate care, essential caregiver, that's different. We're not talking about that. However, if you are in that situation, then come up with either go back and start doing virtual, do windows. You know, if you built a tent, I mean, anything outside of work.
Okay. Okay. And I also have one more question, if that's all right.
Go ahead.
Who do we need to, who does the lab need to specifically notify of our positive? Our lab is currently notifying the county, which they felt like that was the best choice. But are they supposed, who specifically are they, the lab supposed to be notifying?
Are you doing symptomatic, outbreak, or routine?
Outbreak.
If you're doing outbreak, you not only, the lab will not only report, but you will also report to your coordinator so that we, like I said, we're monitoring any outbreak situation.
Right, right. Yes, we, I mean, we are with our, we are sending everything as we get it, but the lab is only notifying the county, and so we received a phone call from the state saying that they had very low numbers for us. They were very inaccurate. And so we were just trying to get it cleared up as to exactly who the lab is supposed to be notifying.
The lab should be reporting to the state no matter what. They have a that falls under your CLIA waiver.
No, the outside laboratories, all of them are required by statute to report the communicable disease cases into the state health department. So if they are not, that is a failure on their end. I'm not quite sure why they notify the counties unless, well, but it still wouldn't matter. Tulsa and Oklahoma City County would probably likely also be made aware, but all of that has to filter into the state to go into FIDO. And the labs have access to be able to report either with a flat file or something like that, that whatever mechanism they use for recording all their regular things they have to report. So, they should know that goes to the state.
Yeah, you essentially are talking about different licenses, and each one of them has requirements.
Okay. Okay, and that's I was just making sure because we are fixing that, and they're going back and fixing the problem. I was just making sure I was giving them good information. But that was all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. I know we've talked about this several times already, but on the positivity rate versus the color and testing.
Okay.
I still have some difficulty understanding that because
let me try a different angle. Are you in nursing home?
Yes.
Okay. Nursing homes need to rely on the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services data, okay?
Right.
The Oklahoma COVID map does not come into play.
We're not using that.
Okay, so when you go to CMS, there is a spreadsheet that you can download.
Correct. I've got that.
And once you download that, and you sort it for your county, and you move over to the right, it's going to tell you your positivity rate.
All right, 13.2, and it shows us to be in the yellow.
Okay. If you, in that particular instance, what county are you in?
Grady County.
Okay. So, for whatever reason, CMS has determined that the number of positives reported to you is skewed because of the population. And because of that, they have decided, based on those few samples, to manually change your county to yellow.
Okay.
Therefore, you follow the yellow color.
My next question with that, then, if we're going to follow the yellow color, I want it in writing. I want to see in writing on the CMS webpage somewhere where it says, if you're yellow, despite your positivity rate, you can safely get away with testing once a week. Where does it say that at so that I can be comforted in knowing that? I've had one surveyor tell me this, one surveyor tell me that. One long-term care person calls and says one thing and another one says another. So where is it in writing where I can have that when somebody calls and, or comes in and does a survey and says, you should have been testing twice a week, you were 13.2. Well, here, it's right here on this CMS webpage where it said, despite my positivity rate of 13.2, I was yellow, so I was okay to only test once a week.
Hello, this is Beverly. I work with Mike Cook, and we looked at this very carefully last week, and where you'll find the information you're looking for is on the spreadsheet. If go pull your spreadsheet, go up, and there's quite a bit of language at the top, and there's a sentence in there that says, follow the color coding.
We did that, and I know where you're talking about, and I read that, and it does say follow the color coding, but it doesn't say how often to test for each color when you go up there and read that.
In last week's FAQ, this is why we were researching this, you can correlate that color coding with the information that's in your QSO memo, because it's going to come back to that less than 5%, 5 to 10, and greater than 10. And you can be confident that yellow is going to be your medium, green is going to be your low, and red will be your high. And we will talk to the
surveyor. No, I'm greater than 10%?
You follow the color coding. You follow the color coding in that spreadsheet.
You're certainly not going to get downgraded because you do it twice a week, but you are doing it more than you have to.
Okay. I'm just wanting to make sure that I'm okay not to test twice a week with the percentage.
It should be on the first tab in that spreadsheet that gives you the breakdown of the information that's in there. It's on the first tab at the top.
Yeah, that's why I saw that, but I can't find where it actually says yellow test once a week.
We agree it's a little bit confusing, but we are confident in the answers that we're providing you.
Okay.
So if you are yellow, you are medium.
Okay,
green is
thank
low,
you.
Uh-huh.
Medium, red is high. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Go ahead, caller. Did you give up on us? Are you still there? Go ahead, caller.
Yes. I have a question. And can I help with something real quick in reference to that former call where she was wanting to know where it was documented at? It's actually in the CMS newsroom, and it was put out September 29th, and it explains everything from CMS. It gives direction and clarification on that if you wanted to read that. But it's under the CMS newsroom online.
I appreciate that. We'll send it out through Gov Delivery. Thank you so much.
It's dated September 29th, and it's a press release.
Okay.
So my question is, one of our facilities, we just received the new Abbott testing cards.
Right.
So the question on that is, how do you want us to document those results if we were to use those?
I didn't understand how to document. For the Abbott Bix now, how do they document that? Do they have to report on those?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's an antigen test.
So they would?
Yeah, they would have to enter it in, just make sure to identify which test. I mean, if it's an antigen test, I believe that CSV file has the place where you can put what test it actually is.
So you would report that just like you would, you know, your CLIA machine,
Yeah, but like if we did it with the resident and or the staff, how would you want us to document their results? So we would have proof that we did it and what the results were. We're in-house. So if the surveyors came in and they asked us where that documentation was, how would you like for us to document that?
It's a manual process.
Right.
My suggestion on that, historically, when you have something like that, you should keep a log. Usually you have to log a lot number, the name of the test, the fact that you did the QC with that lot number, if there is one on that one, and I'm sorry, I have not had a chance to look. And then document that on like a log sheet, and keep it in like a binder. If you know, some facilities have been cautious and taken a picture of it and somehow added that to the resident chart as proof. But usually your physical documentation of it should suffice, because it's a complete manual process. So as long as it's documented with all those components. Were there any additional instructions in the insert and or training? Have you watched the training for those?
I actually watched them do it online at the White House, and I was curious about it, and then it was like, boom, we're sending you out these 200 tests. It comes with a large packet of information, and I have yet to really get through all of that. I fall asleep right like in the middle of reading all of it. So I'm going to have to like dig into it a little bit deeper, but it doesn't really say anything about that. I just wanted to make sure that we were documenting everything the way you guys wanted it, so we didn't have an issue.
Jane, would they have CLIA? They have CLIA requirements they have to meet, correct?
It should fall, and that was the other thing, it should fall under the existing, because it's a point of care. It's not a machine, if you will, but there would still be QC and that sort of thing involved. So, you know, you can contact the CLIA office here at the state, but since they were releasing that testing, it should fall under that waiver as well from HHS.
Yes, I haven't updated our CLIA yet. We just received these on Monday, and so we haven't actually used them on anybody yet, but I was just in the future because it's a very, very easy test, and I was just, you know, if we have to use it, I was just making sure that we knew how to document that in the resident records.
So you just received those?
Yes, we received them. As a matter of fact, actually have been receiving invoices over the last 2 weeks about it coming to us. However, we received them on Monday, not in the amount that they said they were going to send out, but we did receive like 78 tests, two boxes of them on Monday. And so we were kind of playing around with it this morning. And it also comes with a positive test swab, so you can actually play with the test at first so you can see what the testing result looks like. So we've just been kind of messing around with that. But my question was in my mind, how would we document this? Because there's nothing to print out. There's nothing that says, hey, that came from this person.
Did you order those, or were they shipped by HHS?
No, sir. They were automatically shipped by HHS.
Okay.
We still don't have our testing machine in any of our facilities. So I was very surprised to see that this came across to us, and it was just for one of our facilities.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I can say something.
Yeah, yeah.
Old school nurse. Think about if you can remember old school when we did the hemocult. CLIA still required the log, the monitoring, the QC. They still required all that documentation when they came out. So, again, check to see what they'll need from CLIA because there's going to be certain criteria like Janine talked about that you'll have to have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, caller.
Yes, sir. I just need some clarification. I'm hearing the word team supervisor. So you're not are you talking about team leader or more or less the team leader supervisor?
So we redistrict all of our surveyors 2 or 3 months ago. And so each district has a team supervisor, and they have been called team leaders. But they're the person that is responsible for that district and those survey teams. And we sent out a map in Go Delivery. Did we post that on our website?
It is posted, yes.
So it's posted on our website. We sent it out through Gov Delivery. In addition to that, their supervisor, which is a coordinator, will be managing 2 or 3 of the team supervisors.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, I was asking, if we use a lab that is not on this OSDH laboratory name, can we still use them?
Yeah, you can use any lab that has a CLIA license.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, I was just wondering if you would clarify on visitation in Oklahoma County for a with no positive cases of COVID. For assisted living.
Okay. So I can provide you a recommendation.
Okay.
What color is Oklahoma County on the Oklahoma COVID map?
Yellow.
Yellow. So for yellow, my recommendation would be that you, if it were me, I would follow the nursing home guidelines or slightly modify them. I would say you could have some outdoor visitation with yellow. You could possibly do some structured indoor visitation. Let's see. You could still be doing virtual. I mean, not every person's going to want. Do you have any COVID positive in your home?
No, sir.
So you're yellow and your home has absolutely no positives?
Right.
I mean, if you want to bring people into the facility, I don't see any problems, y'all. No? I don't, yeah.
As long as
you're monitored and you follow, you know, all of the COVID screening precautions, that doesn't
but it's
mean...
Not a- say we don't have to allow people inside the building.
Yes.
We're not going to get cited for that.
You have to have a visitation policy.
Right.
That has a common sense approach. Let me put it as simple as that.
Okay.
If you don't have any positives, You're yellow, and you are strictly only doing virtual, yes, we would cite you for that.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Go ahead, caller.
I was just calling for the caller on the Buy Next Now cards. Our facility never did receive a machine from CMS, but we've been receiving the cards for a while now. And there is a training on the Abbott website. There's 6 modules. The forms are on there that you have to fill out and keep your log and everything. So if that helps them.
Oh, well, thank you. Much appreciated.
And I actually have that link. That's what I was just looking for. So if you guys need it to add
okay.
To the website.
Anything else?
Nope. Thank you.
Thank you. *72 So that ends our session for today. We appreciate it. I hope everybody is safe. I know we're moving into the fall and the flu season, and it will be interesting to see the obstacles that we're all up against. The next session is set for October the 28th, so I hope you're well and be safe. Take care.
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.